We'll go ahead and get started. I would like to call the Monday, December 20th Mayor and Council Monthly Meeting to order. If we can all stand, do the Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge of Allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Great. So next on the agenda is we have the approval of the previous month's minutes. This would be for the November 1st minutes that were distributed in the meeting packet. So has everybody read through, and are there any additions or corrections to the minutes as distributed?
I have one addition. There was also the December 10th set that I sent out. I don't know if you all had a chance to review them.
This afternoon.
From the special meeting,
right?
If you can approve those,
that's right.
Too.
Okay.
Yes.
So we'll do that in two separate motions. Is that okay, or do you need it?
You can do them in one.
Okay.
If everyone's reviewed and has no corrections to them, we have to get those to MDE for the Ogden Road closing.
Okay. So it's for the November set of minutes, November 1st set of minutes, and the December 10th set of minutes from the bond review meeting.
Move we accept the November 1st and December 10th minutes as distributed.
Thank you.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Okay, motion passes. Next, we have our holiday decoration award presentations. Yay for the everybody that's made our town look so festive.
It really does look nice out there.
It does, and we greatly appreciate it. Can I have Joe and Patty Holland, please? Yeah, I never. That's our harfangled connectivity. We would like to present you guys with your check. Thank you so much for making the town look festive. We need to get some fun Christmas checks or something. Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Second, we have Shane Ross.
Yeah.
Come on up. That's great!
Absolutely.
No, it's awesome!
Because I do, it's a big deal.
Yeah, no, it's great! The house looks great. Here is your presentation, and Miss Christie's going to take our picture. Hold your check.
I'm going to take your mask off for me. I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's okay.
We want to see that pretty face.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And I don't think our third person is in here. Okay. The third place was Sheila Franks. So we appreciate everybody making the town look so festive.
Of course.
Thank you.
I was going to say, where would the pictures be, like, that we could, she wanted to see?
Oh, we'll post them on Facebook.
It'll be on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Thank
yep.
you so much.
Sure. Awesome. Thank you. Thanks. We appreciate it.
Go ahead. Thank you.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Looks like we do have Pastor Colonna here, if you would like to step up and do our little prayer.
Let us pray. Gracious Heavenly Father, we pause at the start of this town meeting this evening, Lord, not only to acknowledge your presence and to give you thanks, but also, Lord, to invite your Holy Spirit into our midst. Father, we know full well, Lord, that we are alone, our limit in our planning, and our leading, and in our decision-making. So for that reason, Lord, we ask that you come alongside of us this evening, show up in a big way, take the business, the hand, as well as the ideas and the efforts of those elected officials and leaders, fine-tune them in accordance to your will, your perfect will. Father, in this season of Advent, that is, and remember the coming of your Son and his soon return, Lord, we ask that all thoughts and actions align with the hope, the peace, the joy, and especially the love that the Christmas season brings. We ask this in your Son's name, in the name of Jesus. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. Amen. Thank you very much. Okay, next we're going to do public comment. So if there is anybody that is here for public comment, please step up to the microphone and state your name and your address. Next. next we have Commissioner Porter. We're going to go ahead and let Commissioner Porter go. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm going to pass the
pass out something so you can see one of the things that I'm going to talk about here. might need to share.
Counties out of paper.
Oh, there's.
Thank you for giving me the few minutes here tonight. I won't be long. So what I've been trying to do is travel around each of the towns and kind of take a few minutes to talk about some things that you've probably heard about some of this, but I just wanted to come and talk a little bit about the end of the year things as we're coming, you know, to the end of the year, wrapping things up. The first thing, I've given you a map of the proposed redistricting. Redistricting, long story short, is that the governor appointed a redistricting committee, and that committee has been working very hard. I give them credit. They've been working hard to come up with a plan. The map I've given you is the legislative district, and you can see that the proposed legislative delegate district splits Caroline County into three districts, where we're currently two, which is bad enough. But that would, to me, that would basically, be prohibitive for us to even think about having a resident delegate in the future. I testified twice before this committee, 4 hours. They gave me 3 minutes to speak, and I basically pointed out all of our concerns about the resident delegate situation, and what I heard in their 1 minute answer was that they realized that they were doing this, but if they did it any other way, they would have to adversely affect Talbot County. So you can imagine my
response.
Well, yeah, and so I don't know. I talked to Delegate Grace last night. These maps will go before the legislature. They will be considering them. They could very well change them. They could make them better for us. They could make them, keep them the same. But I'm always kind of in a position here where if I ask someone to be on a commission and they spend their time, I'm going to at least listen to what they come up with. And this is the map that they have provided. It's got a ways to go, but we hope they don't do this. So, any questions, I'll be happy to answer anything that I can answer for you at the end. One of the other things that that I have on my list here of concerns is the Accountability and Implementation Board for Kerwin. Just a little bit of background. Kerwin was passed. It is a program that would increase funding for some counties to the Board of Education. Caroline County, in the beginning, would have seen an increase of about $5.5 million beyond the $16 million that we give now. And it would have been, in my opinion, a significant tax increase on this county. The governor vetoed it. They overrode his veto. Kerwin hit, and it was put aside. Now we're back, and the Accountability and Implementation Board now consists of 7 members. I would be glad to give you all a guess as to where they're from, but it is 4 people from Montgomery County, 3 people from Baltimore City, 1 from Baltimore County, and 1 from Anne Arundel County. So that'll take you a map to show who doesn't get any representation. Not only the Eastern Shore, but rural counties on the Western Shore. Expressed my concern to the governor, and felt obligated to confirm the nominations, but he told them that they better be fair. So I'm sure they will. Those are 2 issues that I really wanted to speak about. Another concern that I have, and I think you maybe will have the same one, is the increased emphasis on recruitment for law enforcement. The state of Maryland is taking our taxpayer dollars and they're using them to recruit our law enforcement, trained and certified law enforcement officers to become state police. that is going to be a significant problem for us, and I'm assuming that you're going to be facing probably the same thing in, you know, in municipalities. So any time that we spend the money to train officers and then we find out they're going to be going, and look, I can't say that I blame them because of the benefits and the money that's being offered. I believe in some cases they're even giving signing bonuses now. So that is something I think down the road that we're all going to have to deal with. I don't know how we fight it, except to just keep saying that we don't think it's fair and we don't think it's right. But you know, we should know that that's on the horizon. There are a number of law enforcement bills that are hanging out there on the horizon now that the legislature's getting ready. When do they start, Rob? January?
Second Wednesday in January.
Yeah, for 90 days. And so don't know what they'll come up with this time, but they will come up with something. Just a real quick overview here. ARPA money, we received about $6.5 million. I just wanted to go over with you how the county spent that money. We had about $1 million that was used to do renovations in the detention center that the sheriff's office moved out to the new building. So there were funds that were spent to renovate the basement or downstairs of that so that the corrections officers and staff can use that. $200,000 for economic development. We allocated just a little bit over $725,000 to the Choptank Health Facility proposed here in Fettlesburg. It could be more, but these are the numbers that add up right now. We're still in the process of really working on, as you know, it's a little bit difficult because you got the recovery money, but you weren't told how you could spend it. But you better not spend it in a way that they didn't want you to. So, I don't know. But these are all eligible expenses that we see. And the remaining budgeted $4.5 million will go to broadband. And we are working with Choptank Broadband. And there has been a commitment that we will have broadband to the entire county, to people who want it, within 3 years. And it will be faster than that. It'll be faster, but 3 years is the contract period. We invested this amount of money because we were able to leverage and we were able to share for all the money that's available. And the more we contribute, the faster it goes and the more money that they get. And so particularly after the period of time we've been through now with virtual learning, and we've understood that this is even more important than it ever has been. So that's what I got, so I'll get out of your way. If you got any questions, you can certainly ask.
So, go ahead.
No, I understand that Governor Hogan has requested Attorney General Garland to bring a lawsuit against the state of Maryland because of this.
It's because of the congressional map.
Congressional.
So they had a special session just last week that voted on the congressional redistricting map, which would take the first district of the east, which is the Eastern Shore, and it kind of extends, and it would cross the Bay Bridge into Anne Arundel County.
Okay.
But there's some other stuff, called you politics, there's some stuff on the Western Shore that looks a little crazy. Okay. That's the map that he's asking us to.
There's going to be a number of lawsuits about this.
Sure.
The problem with this thing is that I mean, among the other problems, is the timing. I mean, it's incredible to me that right now, if you want to run for office, you can file to run. You know, if you were going to run for delegate, I don't know how you would know what district you're going to represent. I mean, you know, you may file to run in a district where you live, but if the lines change, you wouldn't be living in the district. You know, it's the timing is just incredible on this. And I look, this is way a bit over my head, but I mean, I think it's probably, they have to do this, I think, every 10 years. But I mean, it's just been really, really, like a lot of things, has been really badly handled. And, I think that I know Delegate Greist is looking at this very closely, and my guess is that if we get if we stay with two districts, my guess is that the districts are going to shift, and we're probably going to see, you know, more people shifted to the northern end of the county. That's just a guess, but based on how they do this on a population basis. Of course, right now we're you're represented by Delegate Mounts and Chris Adams, and Addy is your senator. And the 36B, I get 37 and 36B, I think, Delegate Greist, Jay Jacobs, and Steve Ahrens, and Senator Hershey is the representative. So that's the way it is right now. And that could stay, except that it might shift, the line might shift one way or the other. I couldn't tell you where the line is to save my life. If somebody asked me, it runs somewhere, like, through Harmony. But I could, you know, you'd have to look at a map if you came to me and said, what district do I live in? You'd have to look at a map if you were in that area to really figure out, you know, who your representative is.
Well, you also mentioned about broadband. Will that also include small towns?
The small towns who already have service available to them, mostly have them, have service available, right? This is rural broadband.
Okay.
But, I mean, Verizon offers broadband here, right?
So we have Comcast is the one that has a better service. Verizon does not have any kind of, like, there's no fiber. Fiber is not an option for any citizens currently in town.
Okay.
Unless they want to pay a huge amount to Comcast for business.
The people that are being targeted, because we are a county commissioner agency, we are targeting the rural areas of the county, because right now there is really no fiber at all there. Some people have dial-up, I guess, and you know, but our goal is to get the rural areas that have nothing available now, you know, to have service. And they came in and made a presentation to us last Tuesday, I think, and you know, told us the areas that they were really going to start with, but it. We were adamant that if we were going to provide this money, we wanted an accelerated plan, and we wanted to see to get the whole county covered.
So for the map, how many towns have you already hit, and are you looking for letters of support against this map and sticking together? Or
I would say I've been to Greensboro, Preston, and here. I would say at some point maybe if we decide to do it, maybe your municipal association could do it that way.
I think there's a couple things to consider. This was from the governor's commission. They also drew a congressional map.
Mm-hmm.
It never even got here in the special session. I would expect this map would have the same treatment. They don't like it because of who drew it. So they're going to draw their own. The other thing this map did is it made single-member districts. So there's the option, like we are 37B, we elect two delegates, and 37A elects one, but in 38 they have A, B, and C, and in 36 they don't have any letters at all. There's an option to draw it however you want. They took the commitment to draw a district for every delegate. When you do it, you get what you get. Here, I don't know that the map that comes from the legislative is going to do that. They're going to do what we have now and parse it out. But it may help Caroline to not have it parsed out this way.
And the breaking point, from what I gather, is 40,000 people.
Yeah.
So Caroline has 33,000 people. Yeah. So my question is, why can't we have our own delegate?
Right.
I mean, to me, the logical thing to do here would be to have, you know, every county at least have one resident mm-hmm. delegate. If you wanted to have more in the more populated counties, then you could do it that way.
That's too logical.
Yeah.
One thing to think about long term, once the map is approved or whatever it looks like, you've got 10 years for the next one. When they draw congressional districts, the variance, the number of people in the district, has to be plus or minus 1% of what that number should be. 1% equal that. In the Maryland Constitution, it's plus or minus 5. So it allows a 10% window of what your district can. We could somehow lobby, ask, propose to narrow that down, there'd be a few less games that you could play. 10% is a lot. 40,000 some districts have 36, and some districts have 44, and that's all perfectly legal depending on how you want to do it. And so, you know, if federal districts are plus or minus one, but the state is plus or minus five, that could change that.
And the reason that I think this is important is because, number one, if these districts change, it's expensive. It'll cost us in excess of $25,000 because there'll have to be more, you know, different ballots printed. There'll have to be different mailings printed. And the other thing is, unfortunately, what I think will probably happen, a lot of people will walk into that voting booth and want to vote for somebody, and they'll be told you can't. And they'll say, why? And you'll tell them, well, when did that happen? Well, it's happening right now. That's the problem. It's happening right now. And a lot of these things, you know, intentionally or unintentionally, kind of slip under the radar. And if they can get them through, they get them through. And if they can't, you know, then they got to answer questions. I don't really know. I just know that Jeff Grist is the first resident delegate that we've had since the 80s. And I'm not criticizing in any way, shape, or form the other delegates. I know them all very well, and I work with them all very well. They show up for parades. They do. But my opinion has always been we need somebody who lives in this county. We need somebody who lives here. We need somebody who understands our concerns. Tell them about a particular area, they need to know where that area is, and it's crucial to me that we have, you know, representation here from people who are from here. So we'll see. It's a lot of things going on. I think last year in the legislature there were over 3,000 bills that were introduced. There'll be at least that many this year. We'll be keeping an eye on 3,000 bills and see if we can, you know, figure out where they are, who's, you know, what they're for. Another thing that we're pushing this year that we've pushed for a number of years is Sunday hunting on your own property. And that would seem like a no-brainer, but it gets beat every year. It gets beat by the equestrian people who don't think it's fair that they can't ride their horses because people, you know, hunting. And I'm like, well, then ride the horse somewhere. You shouldn't be on somebody's property anyway, right?
Right.
This is not public land. This is private land. Every year it gets, you know, I think it's been in there ever since I've been in. It's my 11th year. I think we've tried it every year. So that's it for me. Thank you. I appreciate anybody else.
Anybody else? Thank you for coming. We appreciate it.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you very much.
See you all later.
See ya. Thank you.
I don't want to hold
Dr. Gorsuch up. Well, he's next on the docket.
Yeah, Mary Crystal has been very nice to me.
I think I've already heard this, so I think I'm going
to go. Next, we have information on the ESMEC Energy Trust. Dr. Gorsuch, if you would like to take the podium, please.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for the invitation to come and talk with you about the ESMEC Energy Trust. That's not going to work for me. I am Alan Gorsuch. I am very familiar with Caroline County and Larry Porter, having served as your superintendent for 8 years, and assistant superintendent for 9 years before that. So I'm familiar with Fettlesburg and glad to be back. When I left the superintendency, I became the executive director of the Eastern Shore Maryland Educational Consortium, that's the ESMEC. And it wasn't long after that that the state deregulated electricity. And part of my role as executive director was to meet with the finance officers from time to time and the purchasing people. And the issue came up almost immediately. Well, we've never had to buy our electricity before in a competitive deal. So how do we do that? And should we all do it separately? So we decided to form a trust so that we could take some of the work that everyone was going to be doing and do it in just one place. So we created the Energy Trust. And the Energy Trust initially was the nine school districts And we had a trustee and an alternate trustee from each of them. They each contributed, if I remember correctly, $3,000 each for 2 years to get it going. And a very small operation. I was doing both roles at that time as executive director and the Energy Trust manager. And then I left the Energy Trust after 8 years of being a lobbyist and dealing with some of the issues that Larry talked about. I decided I had to do something different than that. So I retired a second time and became just the manager of the Energy Trust. I've been doing that now since 2001, ever since it was started. We had two goals when we formed the Energy Trust. And I'm going to give you this information, but I don't want to read it to you for sure. The goals were to meet our due diligence as finance officers and go to bid, because we felt we had to bid the electricity supply, like anything else that we bid, a competitive commodity. And the other was, at that time, and it's still true, Delmarva, and those were the only accounts we dealt with, Delmarva accounts, not Choptank. Delmarva, because Choptank wasn't included in the deregulation, so we dealt with Delmarva. At that time, their rates changed every quarter. And you all are familiar, very familiar with public budgets. You don't re-budget every quarter. So, and those rates were just going all over the place. So we wanted to bring some stability to our budgeting in the county school districts. We were able to accomplish that. First, we did the fixed rate contracts, as you have done. And we found out pretty quickly that at the end of those contracts, we were kind of like this in a negotiation stance, and it was kind of like, take whatever we want to offer you. So we decided to try a different approach, and we developed with a company that we hired a very strategic process where we go to the market, and we have 80% of our supply. And we go, 80% of it, we go and buy blocks of electricity 3 years out. And we'll go to the two different hubs, Western Hub or Delmarva Hub, depending upon which is cheapest. We have our own sub-account at the Pennsylvania, Jersey, Maryland, PJM it's called, which handles about 11 states' electricity supply. We have our own sub-account there. So we'll buy 80% of our supply needs, projected supply needs, and they keep the accounting for that there. And then the other 20% of our supply, we go to the day-ahead market. Now, that's very risky because, like any market, it goes up and down depending on the conditions of today. If you had money in the market today, you know all about that. We try to reduce risk. But long-term, the day-ahead market is actually cheaper. So we have 20% of our supply there. We then open up what we were doing to other public groups. You have to be funded at least 50% or more of your budget has to come from public tax. So we made our rounds and we invited Federal's Market at that time too to participate in the Energy Trust. We have five towns currently. We have all three community colleges, and we have actually seven of the county governments. The two that aren't in it, one is Wicomico County, for reasons only they know. The one in Talbot County isn't, because most of their supply comes from their own electric company, Eastern Utility. We also service the Delmarva accounts for Harford County Government and Harford County Schools, and all the other school districts, I'm sure. So as a result of the collaboration, we've been able to, and the way that we go about purchasing electricity, we've been able to not only tame the market for us in terms of volatility, we've certainly also met our due diligence requirements under the law in terms of bidding. We've also saved a heck of a lot of money for our participants. Now you say, it's really cost avoidance. It's not money that we put someplace that you get back. It's really you're wouldn't even pay more for electricity than you would otherwise if you bought it from Delmarva and you looked at what they call the standard offer. That's what we compare it to. That's the only thing we have to compare it to, is where the standard offer is from Delmarva. And we have, as I said, invited others to join us. if you have over 250,000 kWh, and are you Mr. D. Ray? Nice to meet you. I didn't know you were here. I was wondering where you were. We've never met. We've spoken on the phone. Thank you very much for the invitation. We've talked together about this relationship. We want you to be part of it. You've applied for that. We have a meeting on January 13th, and we will consider your application at that time. We're very happy to tonight to come here and answer any questions you might have. I'm going to hand out some of this, and if you see anything in here that raises a question, please yell. And I have additional copies of the brochure, which is the first thing you'll see in here. I think you can see that already. If some of the audience wants a copy of that, they find that interesting. The next step, as I said, is to, you've applied. Your next step would be to make a decision to join, and we make a decision to have you join, and we're, you know, I don't see any reason why that could be a positive outcome, and that would be very well. And again, once that occurs, our consultant will contact you, or you'll contact them, and we'll enroll your accounts in our portfolio of accounts. We have a consultant called Enelnok, Enelx now. It was Enelnok, now it's Enelx. They keep buying companies. And Noel Chester is our primary consultant, and he'll work with Mr. DeRay and enroll your accounts. And then, you know, hopefully you'll be able to attend a meeting from time to time. We don't have many meetings. Our meetings are usually by Zoom now, simply because it's more economical for everyone to do it that way. We do have one meeting, which was required by our bylaws, every September, which is an in-person meeting. We weren't able to do that last year either, but we got through that. There's a lot of language issues in electricity that I didn't know anything about. I mean, before we started this, I was a finance officer at one time. The only thing I ever did was pay the bill. I didn't know what else to do. Didn't know much about electricity. As I said, we buy the supply, but there are a lot of ancillary costs that are added to that. And we buy those separately so that we can do the very best we can for you in terms of the end product, that is, the billing rate. The group sets the billing rate. We'll send you... every year, our consultant for your accounts will send the town of Federalburg a recommended budget rate that you should use for your supply from Delmarva, keeping in mind that you're also going to pay the transportation cost that they charge, which is not the supply cost. We also then set the billing rate. We are required to keep a reserve, because we have Washington Gas Energy Services under contract. They actually handle all of the account structure, all the billing, all of the work with PJM, and we have to meet, we're considered to be a broker by the Utility Commission, so we have to buy our fair share of the SRECs, the solar RECs, and other Tier 1, Tier 2 requirements. They keep track of all of that. They keep track. They will bill you, so you'll get, in addition to the billing you're receiving now from Delmarva, you'll still get a Delmarva bill, but you'll get a bill from us that will tell you what the supply portion is. And that's the way it works. Representation on the Board of Trustees, because we started it as school boards, all the school boards have a trustee. All of them have an alternate trustee, which, of course, serves in a person's place. We didn't struggle with what do we do. We wanted to maintain what we had created for the school boards, but we also wanted the others that we're inviting to join to have some say in it officially. Towns each have a trustee. When I say each, the towns collectively have a trustee. That's Joe Manning.
The alternate trustee is Ron Fithian from Rock Hall. The community colleges have a trustee and alternate trustee. The county governments have a trustee and alternate trustee. And I will say, in the 20 years that we've done this, we've never had a contentious issue where really who was voting for what really mattered. I mean, we do, it's simply a matter of taking a look at the data, coming up with the best solution, and then voting on it to make it official. It wouldn't be wonderful if all of our groups could do it. But anyway, that's pretty much it. Any questions you have, I'm glad to be glad to respond. There's a lot of information here in terms of how we do it, what we do it. We have a whole 2 pages of acronyms that you'll get to teach you the language, and because it is different than anything you probably dealt with unless you're in the electric business now. So
I do have a question. Mm-hmm. So we just have a solar field that's coming online, right? So if Dark Solo wanted to buy the green RECs so that they could say that they're green, did they purchase them from you as opposed to us getting that?
No, that solar project is your project.
Okay, so if they came to us and said we want to buy some green RECs, then we would work straightly with Delmarva for that.
No, you would deal with them for that.
Okay.
Yeah, because when I don't know what your contract with them calls for, but most of those contracts answer that question: who gets the RECs?
Okay.
And who gets the value of the RECs? Okay, because you're contracted to pay them so much per kilowatt hour that's produced by the facility they put in place.
Right.
And again, that also yields RECs. So if your contract doesn't speak to it, I'd be very, very surprised.
Okay.
Because that's part of what most of the solar providers look to as a revenue source, is the value of those RECs.
Okay. So we need to check our contract to see how the green works.
And I'd be more than happy. One of the nice things about this is that if you have a question about electricity, like solar RECs, like our consultant is paid to answer those questions as well. So, you know, you have an expert in the whole area that can give you advice, can give you recommendations in terms of what you're doing. Our members have really appreciated that. But sometimes you get into cat fights with where you're going to put a transformer and how much is it going to cost and what the billing really ought to be, and well, they handle that for us.
Okay. Thank
you. Thanks. Do you guys have any other questions?
No. This is great.
Great. Thank you very much, Dr. Gorsuch.
Well,
we appreciate it.
Thank you very much for your time, and I look forward to working with you all. And again, if at any time you do need to come back to answer questions, I'll be more than happy to. I'll be working closely with the town administrator, and let's hope that we get you on board as soon as we can. Rates. I shouldn't mention the rate right now. It's most important. The rate right now, which is the approved billing rate through probably February, is 5.7 cents. The rate probably will go up to 6.3. Don't quote me because we haven't approved that yet, but it looks like that is going to be about 6.3 because the cost of electricity has gone up and is going to go up.
Right, and it's over the winter, so.
Yeah, so we'll hold that rate. I'm sure through June 30, we'll address it again in our May meeting, and then again in September. But one of the things we try to do is to recognize that public entities like towns and school districts or on fixed budgets, you can't be playing this game of, oh, we thought it was this and now it's this, when it's a substantial amount of money. So we're very aware of that. So any changes we try to do gradually. The only time we've had a real problem was during the polar vortex. If you remember the dirty words, I want to tell you, there were companies that had fixed rate contracts with entities like yours that went out of business because they didn't have any language in their contract that protected them against that. That's how bad that was. They actually went out of business. A whole bunch of them went out of business. Mm-hmm. Other people that did have that language in their contract spent a fortune on electric that year. So, you know, by buying ahead, ours was bad enough, but 20% of it was on the day-ahead market. We went from 8 cents a kilowatt hour to a buck 30 a kilowatt hour, overnight, hour to hour. So it can be bad. We've never experienced that again. Don't expect to experience it again in the future, because PJM learned a pretty bad lesson, and they put in controls for that now. So,
okay, I won't take any more of your time. Thank you very much.
Great, thank you. We appreciate it. Thank you so much. Okay, next we have the Broadband Fiber Extension Grant Program, Mr. Helton and Mr. Davis.
Thank you for your time tonight. I think that was a perfect lead-in earlier, because you were talking about the fiber running through the county. We're going to pass out a map.
Some updated maps.
Yes. Today, in the past, we've wanted to kind of have initial discussions and just kind of bullet points of what the town's looking for versus what we can propose and offer. And tonight, we have a very specific plan for you. Going to what the gentleman was speaking to before, the county has money and the state is giving out money. And all of the broadband money that will be passed out, your town will be eligible for $0 on it. Because you have the bare minimum that they deem as internet. So, unfortunately, we've seen this in a lot of different counties. What they're committing to is the state's going to solve the problem of the farmer that has absolutely, or not, I guess other people as well, but people that have live in the rural areas and have no access to internet whatsoever. The issue with this plan is it does not help a town like yourself, where Comcast and Verizon will never come back because they have a monopoly. Why would they come and destroy their own monopoly, or why would they spend $10 million replacing their own monopoly? They've actively said they're not going to. So they are going to leave you kind of in this weird space where the people that live in the rural areas around this town will have access to very high-speed internet at a low cost, and you will be forced to be stuck with Comcast indefinitely, or even worse, if you have Verizon T1. And those are not really going to be functional as we progress, because there's only a limited amount of data that can be put over a copper line. So what we'd like to propose tonight is the start to a process. Keep in mind, we are doing this process on with many cities on the Eastern Shore. We are not trying to compete with Choptank. Choptank's model that you all should be aware of, just because it's important to you, is they're going to run in the county, they're going to run in the rural areas, but if a customer has demand for power, they're not going to supply them internet. There will be some overlap to that, but for the most part, that means anyone inside of a town or municipality will never have Choptank, because that's not in their business model. They run just like they would never run into the town to compete with Delmarva Power. They're running in the most rural areas. So they're fantastic. We've worked with them. We've shared ideas. So we're more than glad to let them do it, because that business model, frankly, is very difficult. It involves laying an obnoxious amount of fiber. And the three-year goal is very, very aggressive, because they're proposing a very astronomical project. So that's awesome. And again, we're not asking to compete with them or do anything to circumvent them. Instead, what we're trying to propose is a cost-effective way for the city to run some fiber into the throughout the town, but in a way that will actually make you money. So what we've come up with as a proposal is we would like to use ARPA funds either this year or next year, and in the amount of $400,000. Now, what $400,000 would do is it would connect all of the municipal buildings that you have, and then in exchange, and as well as a couple other side streets, specifically the industrial park. So what we would do is we would install all of this fiber. We would give you permanent use of the fiber and free internet indefinitely. So when I say free internet, we would give you 1 gig by 1 gig. It is obnoxiously fast and astronomically faster and better than what you currently have. That would be forever. So the biggest thing, if you're looking at the broadband pro forma sheet, I'll kind of walk you through these details. So the investment from the city is $400,000. Keep in mind, that is the running of the, as my brother would put it, like the spine of the fiber network. So we're not asking you to hook up customers for us. What we're asking is that it is not economical to run fiber in any of these towns, just like it's not economical to run fiber in the rural areas. But we've tried to come up with a model in which you can benefit and we can benefit. So you would run to your town, to all of your town buildings, and thus never have an internet bill. So we know over a long period of time we can save you money. And along that path, just imagine every customer that we pass, we would have the ability to say, can we run you fiber? Again, we're not asking you to hook up that customer, but there will already be a fiber in the street. So thus it's much cheaper for us to be able to hook that person up.
So who would pay that?
We would.
So they would still, if I wanted it at my house and you were happening to come and buy my house,
yep,
then you guys would pay to get it to run house.
We would write a contract for preferably 3 years, and the service for a residential house is $89.
Okay.
And that's it. Don't get me wrong, I need that $89 as a deposit.
Right.
I'm going to run the fiber. We're running it straight to your house. And no, it's not like some extra cost that the city would incur or anything like that. And we think the biggest beneficiary of this tends to be businesses because you currently do have Comcast Fiber in a couple of places.
Right.
To be clear, they're renting it from Maryland Broadband, their backbone. So we'd be using some of the same network, but not because ours is just kind of a little bit more superior. We have a lot more localized data centers. So to give you perspective, for a Comcast 100x100 service for fiber in downtown Salisbury, and I'm just trying not to quote your industrial park, but I would venture a guess it's within $100. Our service would be $149 a month. That same service from Comcast is over $700. And we're making money, so we're not complaining. But the key to that is these large backbones is what Comcast owns that we could never own. But if we were to provide you with that backbone, and in this case, just imagine all we're doing is putting a pipe in the ground and then supplying about 160 fibers in it, 160 give or take. The city, what we're proposing to you, is that you get two of those strands permanently. So some of the biggest advantages, and I'm going to get back onto this pro forma in a second, but some of the biggest things is just imagine we're going to use those other 150, but you get those for whatever you choose to do. You put a speed camera up on one of the streets, fine, you own the fiber, tap into it, simply attach the internet right there. You want to have an event, you want to put a security camera, you want to put you want to build a new building, you want a new health department. Okay, as long as it's on any one of these streets, you would simply walk out front, say there's the fiber, connect into the fiber, run it to your building, and you would access the free network. And whatever that is would have our free gig of internet. The gig of internet we'd be supplying you is way more than you are currently using and would use for the foreseeable future. Don't get me wrong, if you came back to us and said we need to have a ton more, but I mean, just checking my phone, I bet you guys have a pretty basic Comcast package here. And so, again, before going into the numbers, I'd like to give you kind of an analogy, and this will be kind of an easy explanation as to what we'd be offering. Right now, you probably have about 100x100. And sorry, some of this isn't public, so we're kind of making some assumptions. So you have 100x100 meg service. So think of a highway. And fiber is a highway in which the lanes, there's fiber and then there's a normal copper path. The lanes are based on those megs. So a 100 meg highway is 100 lanes wide. Okay. Now, fiber, just imagine there is no speed limit. And the other thing is, ping time would determine how fast your information gets to its destination and retrieves back to you. Comcast Fiber, or Comcast in downtown Salisbury, is about a 43-second ping time, or 43 milliseconds. So that means that data is 100 lanes wide, can drive at 43 milliseconds speed conceptually. We are going to give you 1,000 lanes wide, and it has a 4-millisecond lag time. So in other words, it is going roughly 10 times the speed. So yes, the highway might be, they could offer you a gig service, but if their speed limit is, again, it's over fiber, they're basically driving a horse and buggy and we're selling you a bunch of Ferraris. So it's almost hard to compare what we'd be offering you, but essentially we'd solve any internet needs you have forever.
The second component to it is, even beyond the service, having the buildings interconnected
I mean, this is a service that we're building out with Salisbury right now, one that you can talk to the town of Denton. They have done in the past, and that we're working with them to continue to connect buildings as well. That allows you to do a lot of things that you can't do with a separate connection, as far as managing networks, transferring phone calls. I mean, you could transfer a phone call from this building down the street to another building by just pressing one. You know, that all becomes interconnected. If something catastrophic were to happen and the network were to go down, your network is still independent of that global network or the regional network. So you could still send emails, you could still transfer files, you could do all kinds of things within all of your different
government agencies. One of the most important examples down that list would be if, like, the police stations. So in Salisbury, the parking garage has cameras that are directly tied into the police barracks. So the police are monitoring downtown Salisbury at all times. If the internet goes out, that will not stop that feed. They would still be watching a live camera feed of all of downtown Salisbury. So there's, you know, the list goes on, and what we're trying to do is go in and take the approach that there is no one that's coming to help you in the small town settings with fiber that we have met. The talkies, the chop tanks, whatever the one in Delaware is, all of these providers are going for these rural grants. And what we're realizing is it requires an astronomical manual labor, and then there aren't really, it's just not the way we normally do things, because we come from a real estate development background. So candidly, one of the parts of this is that we would start buying real estate here. We've fixed up a lot of buildings in downtown Salisbury. There's done the same in Princess Anne, Fruitland, and some other areas, and we're infrastructure guys. So we know that we're not equipped to go run 100 miles, but when you need to get the nitty-gritty of going down the side streets, well, Kirk's a master electrician.
It's a different skill than what Chop Tank already has these utility poles, and I mean, to be clear, they are the best person for the job.
Yeah,
utility poles. The infrastructure's in place. They have crews that work on those poles. They can do all that stuff, but they don't have crews that can go in and carefully navigate streets and existing utilities in order to dig underground, directionally bore, get to these places. It is a lot more expensive per linear foot and more difficult, but that is where we come from.
Mm-hmm. So.
And one thing I would ask, I believe there's 3 Comcast bills in this one building, I think. Larry sent over the just basic numbers, not the actual bill amount, but the services that you're paying for. So that would eliminate, there would be, you know, one service for all of the locations.
Yeah. And so to go on that, what we did here, we made an assumption. So I do want to start by saying we made an assumption as to what you probably pay for Comcast based on what other cities pay. This could be slightly more or less than what you actually pay. But we're talking, and so if you're looking at the assumptions, you've got what we charge monthly on a household basis and what we charge to a business. The total fiber miles provided is 2.97. Right below that, under monetary benefits, we would provide 1 gigabit fiber service to the town, and that means that every single internet bill you currently have for all of your government buildings would go away completely forever. Never again do you pay for internet for any municipal building. The only way that would change is if you added, say, 20 buildings. You would still get free internet amongst them. You just might need to upgrade past 1 gig. But to be clear, I mean, the city of Salisbury is running off far less than 1 gig. So to give you perspective, you would have to grow a massive amount. And we, in the city of Salisbury's case, they actually paid us to build the network, and we still have to charge them for the internet. So know that we've actually changed the approach with some of these towns to benefit you more. So we've estimated between the four locations, five bills. We estimated $200 to $250 per bill, and that gives us about $12,000 a year. As part of this proposal, you'll see the line right below it. We'd be willing to provide free Wi-Fi to downtown Fredericksburg get to actually, like, we would install the equipment and maintain it as well, so not just the service itself. If you take those two costs in mind, we believe that we could save the city
You can see over about a 23 to 24 year period, we believe we can provide you a rate of return.
That's assuming that the cost of internet doesn't go up for 24 years. I mean, if it went up even mildly incrementally, you'd be saving that much money that much sooner.
Yeah. And as part of this, I think what kind of what other towns have really enjoyed is the aspect that we would own the infrastructure, the pipe, but it means we maintain it for you. So someone comes by and hits one of the hits a pipe in the side of the street. You are not equipped to send out a crew to go start splicing fibers into. Just candidly, I mean, your crews probably aren't designed to fix fiber problems. So we then have to eat that, you know, cost over time, which is actually something we prefer. And to be clear, we don't care what you do with your fibers as long as you don't resell them to our competitors, but we give them the two, because we would, to be clear, we are proposing, we don't mind other competitors. So, for instance, Chop Tank or in Salisbury, one of the bigger wireless providers that you've probably had in this area before actually has all of their equipment in our data center and is using the same bandwidth. So I guess what I'm saying is we play nicely with others, but at the same time, we think this is the start to us being able to provide everyone in town.
Essentially, once that skeleton is in place, because infrastructure is so costly, but we try to come up with a formula that, again, makes sense for everyone, once that spine is in place, it's easier to branch out and start providing to a much broader area. Once we say, okay, we've hooked up a few people on this street, okay, the next street over, they want internet, and we can continue expanding from there. But this lets us effectively get started.
So the initial line, if anybody that lives along that initial route, they would be able to then tap into that fiber.
Even side streets off of that. If they're a block or two away,
okay.
I mean, again,
so we're looking
it's easier when they're closer to that line, effectively. But the goal
I'm just checking to see if my house is along that route. That's all
it looks like it is. Mine is not.
I was also going to say, we are doing this, just to be clear, we're not trying to make this wild profit off the actual construction costs. So one thing we've done in other towns is they've said, well, if you don't mind, we'd like to add X, a line that shoots off and maybe helps nothing to do with what we were thinking, but solves a problem you have. For instance, the city of Salisbury wants to have the park have free Wi-Fi. Okay, no problem. So they're paying us to add to their network, which, again, they'll pay a very small, and in your case, no reoccurring cost. In theirs, they're paying a reoccurring cost for us to maintain the pipework and the fibers and whatnot. So
mostly because it's being done a little bit more piecemeal.
Yes.
So.
Well, also, they have
and they're not
so
using
many
any
more buildings, and they're not using our book. So, but that, again, that's kind of where we can be flexible, and if you all have parts to add to the path, we simply picked what we thought was most logical.
And if we were to add to the path, what is the base rate to add, like, per linear foot, like,
so
if, or quarter of a mile, whatever?
Okay, so Kirk shouldn't be able to answer that question.
Okay.
Also, keep in mind caveats like, cross a river at
right.
50,000,
no, right.
Do this, so...
I mean, it totally varies pretty wildly, but in an area where all the streets are paved and there's sidewalk everywhere, it can be like $150,000 a mile, sometimes more than that. But as soon as, you know, we start getting away from the center of town and getting into areas where it's residential neighborhoods and grass yards, that price can drop. And once you get to, you know, I say rural, but like if it's mostly grass, then it could be only $80,000 to $90,000 a mile. If
right.
It's more of
yeah. And that's for the main pipe, not to necessarily run the last mile to
yeah.
those
yeah.
customers.
Then we're still at a cost of probably $5,000 per house just to tap into our line, just to get from that main line over to the house. And that's where you can see, like, if that spine isn't there, there's a reason that no other business exists. Because if the spine is not in place, it doesn't even begin to make sense for someone to come in. I mean, Comcast has laid their infrastructure, you know, decades ago, slowly over that time. And I mean, Verizon kind of laid down an initial infrastructure 50 years ago. That infrastructure became obsolete, and Comcast ran their infrastructure effectively over top. Now, Comcast's infrastructure is obsolete, but there's no one coming in to kind of upgrade that, and now Comcast doesn't like you guys said, you can get fiber, but you have to pay out, you know, a large amount for the install and a large amount for the recurring costs. Our model is that we don't want, we need to provide not only a better service, but also a cheaper price. And in order to do that, we may not be able to hit every single person right away, because if we don't check both of those boxes, then what are we doing? You know, but in order to start that process, we have to start somewhere. And this is kind of, you know, how we can
get off. Our bread and butter is business internet, because we find that we are, one, the people use it, they're using it much more effectively. Like, you know, if you're at your house, Comcast might be able to hold up pulling off a movie. But if you're in the office and all of your own Zoom together, and then there's somebody else in another room, and they have five Zooms going, Comcast won't stand a chance. Okay, well, those are the people that need it more, and where we find it more cost-effective. So that's why you'll notice a lot of what we're trying to preference is in the industrial areas where we think we can help attract more business. Also because the average person at home that clicks on downloading the Titanic, it might take 3 minutes, but that's far less important than the bank that's trying to transfer money and they need it to be done instantaneously. And
phones also take a huge amount of data, and most residential houses don't even use phones over the internet now, but most businesses do. So it'd be like if your business needed to answer the phone call, download, and Zoom at the same time, like there will be lag.
Yeah. And then a cool program that you get to utilize through the federal government through a recent application we've submitted, and it's been accepted, we can now provide free internet for people that qualify under certain financial restrictions. So I don't know exactly how that line up compared to other subsidies, but this is one where if you, like, definitely a low-income housing development, we could come in, wire the entire thing, and provide internet to everyone for free for the foreseeable future from what the federal government has provided. So in those cases, we actually drop our price to meet the $65 minimum. In that case, we drop the price, but we sell it in bulk, and then we're able to fall within the free, so it costs a customer nothing. And almost, sometimes with businesses, there's an install cost, but our goal is to not have an install cost. And we're looking at, you know, like Kirk said, good day, we shoot for a 4-year rate of return.
Do you have a break even? Because I'm just assuming this is your primary optic route. There's a lot of elderly people live in this town. Now, let's take the industry out of the equation. Only 10 people sign up. Do you have a break-even?
We're coming to know. If you guys do this, our break-even, I mean, it's not quite that way because our... This is the way
that,
to think
that
about
would be,
it.
That would be bad if 10 people signed up.
Yes.
For sure. Like the number would certainly be higher than that, but we can centrally scale to some extent with the customers that sign up, right? So that's why we're saying we need to build this spine, and then we grow it based on interest.
So if 10 people sign up, we only spend $35,000 to $60,000 in investment hooking those people up. Whereas if 500 people sign up, we're then investing $500,000 like $2 million. So it's like, yes, the break even is more than 10 customers. The exact number is kind of tough to, because it's every customer's an investment for us.
The challenge is selling those of us sitting up here generally understand that the fiber runs into the house. You need to have your own router. You need to take care of all your other stuff. And then that's separate from your TV, right? So whether you're just going to go to streaming services or whether you're still expecting to watch your Baltimore news station, you know, just the understanding of what they're going to, it's not just $89 doesn't get you what you think it's going to swap out, right? It's not a one-for-one swap out.
Yeah.
It's understanding what you're putting in, what we're offering versus what you're still going to need to do.
We do educate the customer about our TV packages. We're partnering with Sling.
We're working on that, too. So hopefully by the end of the year we should have something that we can offer in-house. The other services like Sling TV are genuinely superior services in the sense that, like, if you actually go look at all the channels they provide for like $35, I mean, dang, it wasn't really until we started doing this that I looked at it like that is a much better service.
YouTube TV, for instance, and the reason we're saying these other options is because we simply went and vetted the idea of can we sell people TV, and we were like, wait, The problem is not your TV. The problem is that you have bad internet access, so then downloading anything is problematic. But if you have amazing internet, then YouTube TV actually allows you to pick the channels you want. So why go spend $100? You can go to YouTube and go, I only watch ESPN, $7. Click, and then you want to add History Channel, you click on History Channel. You want to add whatever. So we've just found that we think that the Comcast is kind of obsolete in that that was one option. You have to pick the 150 channels. You have two options there. We do want to educate. In fact, in Salisbury, when we're dealing with larger apartment complexes, we're just discussing today, we've even started partnerships where we'll potentially supply the TVs in the units. A smart TV, so that it is, here you go, you pay us $89, and if you want to download TV, here are the 20. I mean, now there's even more than that. There's so many different streaming services. So that's what we found as a solution. But yes, it is important to understand. But a good example would also be house phones. Like, they set up all of their systems, and all of these designs were under the impression that we had house phones. And venture, I guess, most everyone in here doesn't have a house phone anymore. I think some people do, but, like, it's now part of this business model they have. And you're paying, I mean, you pay for the triple play.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But you watch three channels, and you don't use the telephone, but they require it. So, you know, then just what I've noticed at my house, we just get Comcast, and now we just pay for that. Get there.
Yeah. Hey, when that happens.
Hey, we're like only 100. We're going down Camden. We're our brother live really close to each other, so we're going to get to that neighborhood.
And his parents are right there, so I'm like, between the three of us,
Yeah, but that's actually, so we, not to get too long-winded, but that's like, we have more of an organic approach. We're not sitting here running around the subsidies that the county is providing. The state is asking for a 90% match. They'll give 90%, and then the county would put up 5%, and so the provider puts up 5%. In our case, we're not asking you to hook up the direct customer because we know that it doesn't make sense for you to pick us over Comcast. So we've tried to create a solution that says, look, this is an investment for yourselves. We benefit. Candidly, we wouldn't be here if we didn't. But at the same time, you now are creating a competitor, but also an entire network that can be used to meet the open competition you're looking for. So people like, I mean, Talkie, Chop Tank, I mean, Blue Surf, we play really nicely with. Like, we want, if you guys want a new cell tower, you're going to want fiber there. Nowadays, we actually just talked to Verizon, they want 100 gig service at all of their cell towers, which means they're asking for an incredible amount of bandwidth. So to give you perspective, you would have to have, I don't know how many copper lines, 100 copper lines there? Achieve that?
I don't even know. Yeah.
So you need calculator. Yeah. So you would need, pipes full of copper lines. And now what we're saying is we can give you one fiber and we can do 20 of those. So this is not equipment
if fiber
designed
is
for current. This is designed for the future.
Yeah.
Because no matter how much more data, if we started doing these meetings where there was a hologram standing there, we are talking about we can give you hundreds of times more data than what we're giving you in this situation. The upside of the technology is vast.
It's like a little naive to say this, but fiber is relatively future-proof in the sense that there's not really an upper limit to the amount of data that can be transferred over a single fiber. The limit is more the technology on either end. And when 99% of the cost is building the infrastructure, then upgrading the equipment on either end, which has to happen all the time, and where prices are constantly falling, instead of a $2,000 router, we could install a $10,000 router, and over the exact same fiber, you can have literally orders of magnitude more. You can send hundreds of gigs over a single fiber. So that request from Verizon is, it changes nothing in terms of the physical infrastructure that's being run, as long as it's fiber. What changes is simply the equipment on either end capable of passing all that information along.
So what is, this is our third presentation for you guys. What's the next step?
Yep.
We would like a check for $400,000.
Well, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Here's my question. Like, in our packet, we've got a chart with some numbers. They're slightly different from this here. You talk about an assumption of like 210 residential customers, but when I look at a line going down Bloomingdale to Maine, crossing down
East Central just far enough to get to Reliance. I'm not positive. I think I put some money on it. You don't even have 211 houses.
So imagine that line we can then extend quite far in either direction.
And I guess that's what I'm saying. Before I even consider $400,000, when do we get to the point of, like, this is the real map? This is what we're proposing. Because the map's changed a couple times, but now we got a dollar figure.
We have a dollar figure because we'd like to solve the first problem, which is you physically right now are paying for internet and you don't own your own network. That is what we're proposing tonight. Yeah. The much bigger picture is basically ours to solve, because what we're saying is this is that core network, and then we have to go sell customers to go expand it further.
We want this to make sense, even if we never hooked up a single customer.
When do we bust out the books and say this is what our bill really is? Instead of assuming $250, we actually can look and say,
In fact, actually, I don't even think, if it's not public knowledge, you don't even need us for that conversation. I think that's an internal conversation.
Right.
And I think what we're trying to do is, we came with an initial conversation, and we did this in a lot of towns, where we went, what do you want? And then we heard a lot of feedback, and so today's plan is designed around we think this is logical for you, whether we hook up your residents or not. That is our personal opinion. Now, don't get me wrong, those people are going to benefit. And ultimately, one of the biggest things is this goes right down to Main Street. And if you're ever trying to revitalize Main Street, technology is not just a necessity. It is the only thing that will determine if it succeeds. Because like in downtown Salisbury, it has changed everything. Because I can go to every single tech company and be like, the industrial park, which is awesome.
Right.
But guess what? It's cooler to be downtown.
Like, there's a couple industrial parks that would be served. We have more than just the one.
So we begin with a number that would make sense. Again, if we were to do nothing other than the line we have shown, we wanted that to make sense. We're not asking for the $5 million handout, which, again, is a good investment for the people, but we're asking for you to invest really only in yourselves, and we make the investment.
I guess I'm sold on the idea. I just don't feel like I've got specifics.
We have a map that we can send to you. It's an online map, so it's visually it's more professional than the printout.
Okay. And like I'm saying, like you're servicing one of our industrial parks, but the one where there's actually growth taking place right now is not serviced on this map. That's what I'm trying to be like. Okay, like.
Could you tell us your wish list? Am I allowed to ask that as an open question? What are the things you would most like me to add to this?
Where would we get the most bang for our buck for the $400,000 is what we're trying to get to.
To be clear, we picked $400,000 based on the rate of return for a 23. We picked 23 years. This is 23.87, and this is what we determined we thought a municipality. But if you'd like to take a 40-year approach or a 17-year approach, we can manipulate this. This was based on with the understanding that those backbones touched us in the furthest corners of your most dense areas. That will then allow us the best chance and opportunity to be able to sell in those areas. But if you're saying the other industrial park, we can add a line, and we will send over an a la carte menu that says, this is exactly what $400,000 gets you. This is blue, and if you add blue, it's $75,000. If you had green, $200,000, and I mean, again, we've got other towns we're asking for way more money than this.
But I think that would be helpful if you did the one with the different colors. Like if we went up West Central, if we went out like over branched into the extra industrial park.
The Chop Tank House. I mean, they're going to be building a new medical center up the street.
That would be a perfect example. We would be glad to do that.
Is there? When you made this map, did you come to Devilsburg, ride around, or did you?
Absolutely. Yeah, we come back all the
time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because we've handed the made offers on a lot of buildings in downtown.
And again, we worked backwards from the number that started with what number makes sense just from the city's point of view. If we were to essentially come in, do this, and even if we failed, you will have made a rate of return based on just the infrastructure we built only for the city that would eventually see the city saving money in 20 years. You would not have an internet bill. This infrastructure is built
if we fail, you still own it.
Yes. If we fail, the wires are still there. You still own your fiber. Effectively, you could then sign up with any provider and transmit that data along that Zoom network.
Why don't we put this on our January meeting thing too?
But with some different extra colored lines.
I actually have a question.
Technically speaking, your fiber's hooking into somebody else's fiber to get the data from somewhere to Federalburg.
Maryland broadband.
So that's the Maryland broadband you're hooking to?
Yes, we're a co-op.
That's the same thing Comcast hooks to.
And Choptank.
So part of the process of selling to businesses would going to be a... And my brother owns one of the businesses in the industrial park. And part of his thing was to have a backup. He does a fulfillment company. He's very a lot between phones and on the computer. But if you're in the end, your fiber's hooked to the same fiber as everybody else. Yeah. If it's a problem outside that's not local, wouldn't all the fibers be down at the same time?
That's a great question. So Comcast Network, they're only borrowing the Maryland Broadband Network within the industrial park. So Comcast has its own equipment located in the Eastern Shore. We have our own location on the Eastern Shore. We actually have one in Denton and one in Salisbury. So in this situation, the fiber running from the start of the industrial park down that street might be shared by two people. But in a lot of cases, that's going to be the situation where that short run might be shared. But once you get to the next block, one is Maryland Broadband, one is then Comcast. And in this case, then we would split off and go Simple Fiber down the street.
So like Comcast and Maryland Broadband aren't going back to a centralized hub using one cable?
No. But to be clear, there's only 10 internet providers in the entire United States.
But, yes.
So there's these 10 mega providers that are these data centers that are just unfathomably large. That is their core networks. That's where everyone is buying from the same thing. So, like, Cogent is one of the examples. That's who we buy from. But we're also working on buying from Hurricane Electric and a bunch of others. We buy from Comcast, to be clear.
One thing that
everyone has to buy the different internet services to kind of like interconnect these networks. So very rarely would one outage be something where all of like it would splinter out to all the different providers.
We also because we're in Salisbury and in Denton, to be honest, this is a strategic location in the sense that we would like to connect those points through Federalsburg. When we do that, we have a separate connection in Denton. And then two different services in Salisbury. So we do have a backup provider that is Crown Castle in Salisbury. So when we make that connection, we essentially now have we have that redundancy so that if a line broke coming from Denton, it doesn't matter because there's another one coming north from Salisbury and vice versa.
So keep the problems localized.
This is part of actually that process of redundancy. This would be a great strategic point to make that backup.
Okay.
And it is worth noting that even though some of the... So if we're taking our fiber from the industrial park and we're both using it, the real trick to having effective internet is the fewest hops possible because the copper line and the fiber line are still going... They're still transmitting information very quickly. The slowdowns are each piece of equipment. So that's where your ping times... So in the case of Comcast, that is an example of where Comcast is... borrowing someone else's network, so you have the delay of the information being transferred from one network to the other, then shot up the street. Then that when that comes back, it's jumping between networks, whereas we're staying on
small machines. So like when you were talking about that ping time earlier, what that 43 millisecond latency means is that it's going from here and it's going up the road to a machine, and then it's transferring to another machine, and it's transferring to another machine, and then it gets all the way back to one of those 10 core hubs. Then it has to hop back that same route all the way. Whereas when we come to town, we would put in a data center that would be that direct connection from here going north. So that's why the latency is so low. It's not jumping between machines. It's going from just one right back to Northern Virginia is where that nearest very large...
And to experience the full thrust of what you're offering as a homeowner, what's going to be my outlay to be able to enjoy this super quick?
$89.
No.
What kind of router would he need to purchase to put in his house?
We give you a router.
You'd give us a router. You'd give a router.
Just give me $89, and you're gonna have Wi-Fi in your house. It's going to be phenomenal.
Again,
we don't charge rental. There's no fees.
It doesn't make sense for people unless we are faster and cheaper. So
right.
Again, that means it's difficult to get to every single person. That's why we're going to start with the spine. which and work from there. So we're not going to come in and tell the homeowner it's $3,000 to get to their house. Otherwise, what are we doing here? That's not a
right.
service.
No, because 89 is very.
So it's $89 to hook up to run the wire from the trunk.
$89 is
a
monthly
service.
Contract. You sign a 3-year contract.
They're running it to your house
free.
It's
going to take us basically at least the whole life of that contract.
And 89 is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, and 100 down by 100 up service.
Yeah, right. Compared to what you're getting. And
yeah.
So oh, yeah, no, I was just curious about the equipment inside the house and what the cost may be.
Yeah.
Well, and there's no, like, $5 router loan fee.
A month. We don't have to rent the router.
Oh, Andrew, you guys, I don't know if you know this, you're all, because you're in the rural area, you're all going to be rate limited soon. So you have a maximum amount of data you can use from Comcast at your home very soon. They just didn't do it in this region, but we were just looking in the south now. They're data limited, so you, like your phone plan, oh, you accidentally went over? Oh, no, keep watching TV. It's going to be astronomically expensive now. And that data cap is because they're not updating their old equipment. So in a lot of these situations,
they just can't keep up with the increases. So they have to do something to say, okay, our build-out capabilities are not keeping up with user demands, and all those unlimited plans are simply growing in what people are actually using.
Yeah.
And I just want to say, I apologize, because the first time we were doing everything by Zoom, you know, we weren't able to make all these, so that's why
it's... Yeah, it's much better to have a dialogue with you guys.
Well, we felt like we just need to be here in person.
Well, and so. Candidly, the feedback we just got, like the new medical center, the industrial parks, that's the stuff where when we first drew this picture, we're like almost scared to walk in and say, this is what we'd like to do, because each town has had a wildly different wish list. Like, Hokomok was adamant about free Wi-Fi downtown. I haven't heard one of you say a single word about it, so it's probably less important. For them, it was the biggest detail. They were like, we want downtown Wi-Fi because we have a lot of events and we cannot actually have vendors. We were like, oh, well, that's easy. We can solve that right now. You now can provide it. I mean, we provide the Wi-Fi for the, this year we'll be providing for the Folk Festival. We just did the Salisbury Christmas Parade.
I mean, I'd like to do it in the parks, but you're hitting the marina.
Yep.
And, well, and Chambers Park would be right off, would be a run right off of.
Right there.
Yep.
So,
yeah, it goes right past when it goes past your house.
That's this one here going up south. And I believe first I'm going to look left.
Me too.
Is the industrial
park. Yeah. So we'll put in, I'm going to put in options for. So I'm gonna, we'll put in for the industrial parks. And again, these will just be options so you can see the pricing. And candidly, we're not making a bunch of money off of this initial, just so you all know. Like, there's, we'll get a little bit to cover our overhead, but for the most part, the money we are looking to make is the reoccurring cost, and primarily from businesses. In the industrial park.
So there is, where you are running, there is one industrial park. There's just another one on the other side. We have two.
Yes.
And then
there's
the
actually
other
three.
One.
Yeah, there's another one. Yeah, there's actually three.
The fish farm is also... going north.
That's in the new section.
Yeah. It appears to run through Meadowbrook.
This?
It runs behind Meadowbrook.
Yeah.
Because this is Meadowbrook, would be right here. Because Meadowbrook.
So we were saying the parks, the industrial parks, and then the medical building. I apologize.
Which is going in back of
it's
Food
by,
Lion.
It's behind Food Lion.
Yeah, so right. Running down there already.
Yep, that passes very close here.
We'll show it just so you can kind of get a thought process on it.
In the 100 block of West Central.
Sorry, Rob.
One more block, Debbie.
Help a brother out,
that's
man.
The budget gets cut right that way.
And if there's any other, specifically ones where, like, the city is incurring a bill, because our inquiry was for where you guys are currently paying a bill. You know, I would think those are top ones where you can save immediately. And sometimes the the county's another player. You know, that's a different conversation. But if there's anything else we don't know that you guys are incurring an internet bill somewhere.
So are we paying for the police department? I thought they were hooked to the county fiber. We pay a Comcast bill for them. I thought for some reason they were hooked to the county fiber.
It's just
like
the EMS, right?
Because
in
the
fire
the
department.
Ones, they do want a backup.
In the library.
So
right.
If you had like something like a fire department or police station having a backup circuit, so they may look at it and say we have one, or they may already have two, but we could offer that second connection effectively for free.
Yeah, I work for Anne Arundel County Public Schools, and each of our school locations have a backup Comcast line. Yeah. Like, we are connected to the county I-ring,
mm-hmm.
and that's what they use fiber primary, but if something happens to the fiber, they fall over to the Comcast
yeah.
backbone.
And we've been dying to get into, we actually, our lobbyist and I are having a meeting next month about, we've been dying to try and help the schools and some of the bigger bandwidth users. Because, I mean, to give you perspective, so a gig of fiber, if you were to purchase it from us, is $1,150. To buy that from Comcast, $1,700. You're still going to have some of the latency ping time issues. That's $1,700. To buy that from Verizon is $3,500 a month. So you can start to see, like, when we're helping someone like a school, and then, one, God forbid, you want 5 or 10 gigs, we know that in certain circumstances we could be saving the schools $25,000 to $50,000 a year.
I think we currently have 40 gig, and I think we're going to 60 gig.
And that's to supply all of them? Yeah, so, I mean, that's a one.
Burnt to the internet pipe.
Yeah, but you guys are massive.
Yeah, we have 85,000 students.
Yeah, so that, and that's a, yeah. So those are examples of things, like, we can do, the deals we're getting are much better, and we don't mind we don't mind sharing. Because when we first approached this, no one has taken this approach. Like, no one has come to Maryland Broadband or any of the towns and said, hey, we're going to try and get creative. Because realistically, there is no government program to solve this, and the county specifically told us they will not match anything inside the city limits. One thing, just so you know, for the future, if you ever could get them to consider it with ARPA funds in the future, we discussed with Worcester County, inside every single municipality, we were willing to do a one-third match past this. So they wanted the federal, the municipal buildings, and then they said, what if we just start running down side streets with you? Okay, well, we said we would put up one-third of the money if the county put up a third and the city put up a third. Unfortunately, the county said the exact same thing that Caroline said, which was, we're not going to spend a single dollar inside the municipalities. But it's something that we don't mind in the future. Like, we don't mind, this plan involves us writing a lot of checks and spending a lot of time here. We don't mind that, and we don't mind getting creative. So we'd love to hear
it. It only makes sense if we build a large and growing and successful network. Like, if we don't achieve that, then this isn't going to make sense for us.
No.
Okay. Do you guys have any more questions?
No.
Also, just one last thing. Just, you know, our network has, at its core, has never been down. So, like, we've never had the issue of.
Oh, you should not say that.
Yeah. They always, yeah. Right. It's like almost like a challenge. But, like, basically, you know, we've never had the issues, and nowadays with how much that costs people at school. I can only imagine if you're sitting at home and your Comcast goes out. I mean, we're just talking to Princess Anna. They've had it like 3.5 days out of this year they haven't had Comcast, which seems crazy. I mean, that just means you lose 3 whole days of your kid's education.
Yeah.
How long have you guys been in business?
So we've been providing internet for a little over 3 years, and we've been selling internet for maybe a year and a half. So we are... Our background is for data strategic development as well. We're an infrastructure and development company, so we go buy historic buildings, and that's actually one of the reasons we got started here was we were looking at buying several of the buildings, and we have made some offers, and we've had great conversations. I think inevitably we will end up buying some properties here. We started to provide internet to our current tenants, and we were buying Comcast, and then we ended up partnering with Maryland Broadband to actually start building their data centers. So the internet that the schools are coming from using Maryland Broadband, those data centers are being built in our buildings. So in Salisbury, Denton, and Pocomoke will house these, like, basically where all the equipment is. So once we started that, we realized this is so stupid.
We were interconnecting, we were building for Maryland Broadband, and then interconnecting our own buildings, and essentially at that point we're like, okay, well, we should just be providing to all the people we're passing along the way also, and spun that off into a separate company. Our other partner that's not here, he's the IT genius. He doesn't want to be here for this kind of thing, but he's the genius behind all that kind of made that even a possibility. You know, we do infrastructure, and we really know infrastructure well. But he's the IT side, and he's been doing it for 20 years.
It's not our primary product. We offer phones, which is where he's had his experience for 20 years. He's got a phone service company. So we realized we were being silly because we had the internet was essentially in the basement, and yet we were taking Comcast and providing that Comcast for our tenants. And then we'd realize how much cheaper it would be to just run the wire upstairs. That's where it all got started.
And can we, would it be possible to also get a sample contract?
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
That we could just see the terms and what kind of what we'd be looking at? Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. That'd be awesome. All right. Thank you. So you guys are going to get us a more colorful map with like an a la carte menu for options.
Perfect. And yeah, that sounds fantastic.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks for
have a good night. Thank you. We don't see you. I guess we won't until next month. Have a Merry Christmas. Happy Holidays. I know. I know. We're gone. Be here for the holidays.
Enjoy.
Thank you. Okay, next we have Allison Murphy with the Caroline County Board of Elections Dropbox ballot request. Thank you for sticking with us, Allison.
Maybe.
No, she might have done. Yep, there she goes.
Here.
So does anybody have any questions? So we received the proposed location. Do you guys have any questions about the what's proposed?
No, my only question is the town property?
It's got to go to the right of that.
So it looks to me like it was actually on
service today.
Yes, it is. I think it is because when we have elections, we are, that's where the line is.
Yep. Yep.
So, but technically it's not ours.
There you go.
So with that being said, I don't know what that would do as far as having it on private property. If they would agree to it, or if we need to do something different.
Well, that was my question too. Well, one of them is what we're looking at a screenshot from the surveillance camera, or is it just an actual? Okay.
No, those are. If you're looking at the photos that that are on the sheet, the two photos, those are photos that I took.
Okay. I just think if we move it, you can see on that sheet where the difference in blacktop is. And
okay.
Town property, I think, is the less dark blacktop.
Yes, so if we took the first parking space out of commission for that time frame, then that would be on our property,
right.
But within the same purview of the security camera.
That's what I'm thinking.
Right.
Okay. Let me pull that photo up. Okay, so I see what you mean. So if I just move it over to the space that is not the dark pavement, that would be still the town... that would be acceptable.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think that's better to keep it on our property.
Just as a point of information, is the plan for the 22 election to return to normal polling places for in-person voting? So that Bettelsburg would have a live polling place? Like, we didn't have that in the 20 election. So is that the plan as of right now?
That is the plan.
Okay.
Yes, so we are restoring all of the polling place locations and moving away from the modified that we had in 2020.
Good. So our folks could still early vote at HAPS, drop their vote here, or vote in person at the fire. So, okay. So this isn't in lieu of that.
Right, it's just another option.
No, this is an addition.
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
Councilman Windsor?
I'm good.
Okay. So can I get a motion to allow that we put the ballot drop box for the election on our town, that first square of the parking lot?
I make a motion that we allow the ballot boxes on the town parking lot.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay, motion passes.
Great, thank you so much. And I will modify that the photos to properly show where the ballot drop box will go, because I do need to submit this also to the State Board of Elections for final approval. But obviously, your approval first. So I will modify that and send you a copy.
Perfect.
Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you. Have a great night.
You too.
Up a camera.
Yes.
Okay, next we have the interim town manager designation policy. Town Manager DeRee.
The mayor of the council with a policy to designate an interim town manager, and then the event of the town manager position becomes vacant for a indeterminate period of time, separate, of course, from a vacation or sick leave or other sort of approved leave. And this policy proposes that that position be the chief of police position. And also proposes that this policy be reviewed by mayor and council every 2 years.
So, I understand that you're creating the policy. Where do we have this kind of stuff? Like, we probably should put that like in the employee manual, which probably could use a review.
Yes.
Okay.
Have you discussed it with the chief?
Yes.
And he's agreeable.
Yes. And that's why it does it. It's built in to have a periodic review this way. Should that not be a skill set or a desire of a chief of police at some point, one of the other senior staff members or a political party to be determined later takes a position.
And I don't know if it's possible, but would it be easier just to come up with a procedure to appoint one as opposed to naming the person in the thing so you didn't have to review it every 2 years per se.
Yeah, instead of
so allow the mayor and council in the event of
in the event
a departure.
Of the town manager quitting, falling ill, whatever. These are the procedures of what happened without naming the actual person, because we've had excellent police chiefs in the past who I would not want to sit in that seat for anything in the world.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, the next one might, the one we have now did an excellent job. The next one may be good or might be bad. Why hamstring you to that? So there's something you have to always keep checking on to as just lay out the procedure, rather be the mayor and council should meet after.
To select the person to appoint an interim.
It's already there that who does it, how it's going to be done. We just have to meet one day and decide, okay.
Well, then you wouldn't need to renew it every 2 years because
exactly.
It's based on the person at the time.
That Larry's position was vacant for whatever reason for X amount of time, we knew we had to get together and say, okay, who do we think? It may be that the current mayor, 10 years from now, Rob, with all his background, is stepped right into that position.
I do like the idea, though. And my brain went there too, so. But then I tried to put myself in the situation of, well, let's say this was happening. And as a mayor and council, we were going to try to, after 3 days of not having a town manager, meet and real quick figure out who that person is. I like the idea that at least we've named this person. And right now it works for us. And 2 years down the road, the mayor and council can look and you can see who's on the deck chairs on the boat. And you can go, well, that... I saw both sides of it. But then I tried to really put myself in like the, okay, if we're going to sit here and we've got an emergency, that's what this is written for. Is that the time to figure out who's got the best qualifications? Or could we look at a regular? Maybe the regular basis isn't every 2 years. Maybe it's every year.
It would have to be whenever there's a change in personnel.
Change of personnel.
So every 2 years might be good to start with, but the chief leaves in 6 months, and then 6 months later you got to relook at it and hire a new chief along with them deciding if he's going to be the right person to do that.
Right, because by de facto it would be that new chief, which we might not prefer to pick that person if it was less than 2 years.
Can we add that, on a biannual basis or
change to personnel?
Change in personnel. Because I'm with Rob, I like having a plan, and because I think a 3-day turnaround for all of us to get together or whoever the council is and might be.
Well, let's face facts. There's a limited number of people who work for the town fellowship at any given point who's going to...
Right.
It's not like we're looking at 50 people. No, and I'm good with either way. I just thought, in my mind,
right.
it made more sense not to name the individual person because we're dealing with a limited number of people
well,
who we
true.
Would name to that position anyway.
Right.
So as... Because it seems to me we have a lot of stuff that probably should be reviewed every 2 years that never gets reviewed
right.
again. So why add one more thing to the list of stuff that probably won't be done?
It'll be reviewed the night before the new chief of police you don't want is to be appointed.
Exactly. That's kind of what I'm saying. So we're then being rushed to try to get something done to then not have the person who we don't want sit there and end up legally
yeah.
having this.
But I also like the idea, again, I'm not disagreeing with you. If I was in that situation, I would at least like the heads up that you're the guy. Like, if I'm the current chief of police, at least I
right.
know in the back of my head, if anything happens, I'm stepping into this job, as opposed to something has happened and you want me to do what? Like, if this is the policy, mm-hmm. then that person, whoever that person is,
well,
has that sort of going in the back of their head.
Yeah. Well, let's say Larry's out. All right, Larry, and we'll pick on you. He's got COVID. He's in quarantine for 10 days. So there's an interim that comes in. Do we need to restrict that interim's authority?
I think you're talking more like you hit the lottery and you moved to the Caribbean.
Or die.
Well,
We don't like to use that anymore.
Let's say Larry hits the lottery and he's like, that's it, I'm out.
I'll give you 60 days.
I'm rolling out. Right, but in that case, then we would meet to appoint somebody so we could either say that maybe the policy states that mayor and council shall appoint a backup, right, and then based subject to personnel change, the backup could be changed. Right, so right now we're all comfortable with chief being the backup, but if something shall happen with personnel, then that plan's already in motion, right? That's already recorded that's what we've made as a decision as a council, as a backup.
Well, if we're naming an alternate or, you know, an interim, do we need to say anything about personnel changes? I mean...
Well, if, like, to
if
Scott's point, if
specific
chief
person.
Were to choose, if chief were to leave in 6 months, we've
right,
already...
Well, the interim
already
would hopefully only
chief.
Be for a few months or whatever, you know.
Right. I think
no.
you're saying appoint a specific individual, not... the department.
Well, I was saying it was the individual, but it's based on, it's subject to change based on personnel.
Right.
Right, like what Scott was saying. So, like, so we have a meeting, we've decided that if something were to happen to the current town manager, if he would win the lottery and leave, the next man up for interim would be Chief McDermott.
I think that might be what we could clarify, is instead of saying the chief of police position, say Michael McDermott. And then if Michael McDermott doesn't work here anymore, we have to review this policy because he's named in it.
Well, can't we leave it vague in a policy and make that determination as a council so that it's on record that that's who we've...
If you change it so that the mayor and council shall determine who shall serve as interim, and then separate from that, you make the determination in the minutes somewhere.
And maybe going forward, whenever you hire a head of a department, you know, you say... You know,
and this person
could
shall
be
not
a possibility.
Be.
You know, just put it out there so they're not like shocked if we ask.
It also prevents you from, say, Chief McDermott leaves and your policy is chief of police. On day one, the guy gets or lady gets in here and you say, "Oh no, no, no!"
Right,
and changing it.
Yeah, that's
and that
kind of obvious.
Yeah,
yeah.
So then we're back to mayor and council.
Yeah, it's
so
let's
shall appoint the most
shall
qualified
the
individual,
most right?
And just leave it there, and we'll do that as often as we would need to during that time.
I mean, because in all honesty, it could be a mayor and council member.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could. I mean, if that's
I mean,
how it worked out,
it may not necessarily be a department head or a
right.
If any of us were retired and had time and all them other things that I don't have, so.
Yeah. Kim, get another hat.
Nope.
He said retired.
Right? He did say
that's
retired.
The only one retired.
Yep. Okay, so do you want to work up some verbiage to go with that, and then we would just vote, then we would just put it in the minutes officially that if this were to be the case at this time, the specific person would do that? Is that what we need to do?
Yes. Say that again.
Yeah.
So you would have the blurb about we shall appoint, and then we would go on record stating that at the present time, this is the person that we would select.
Yes.
If something, if Larry were to win the lottery and roll out.
Yes.
Do we need to do that?
Do you need to select someone now?
Do we need to specifically have on record who we would pick in that situation?
Yeah, in case mayor and council were to change, or it was the middle of the night one night and you all were in the Bahamas with Larry after he won the lottery.
Win
someone
big,
is there to step right in without having a meeting.
Better win the big
yeah, that's the plan. That's my only plan.
Okay, so we're going to work on verbiage and then what we would need to do to put that verbiage into motion.
Mm-hmm.
Right, okay.
And interim is a relative term as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's 15 days in the hospital, but the budget public hearing, well, treasurer's perfectly able to step into things.
If it's, gets another hat.
If it's 3 months,
right,
then somebody's got to be doing the day-to-day of everything that goes on over there.
Right.
Down the hall and currently down that hall. So, enjoy finding junk cars in yards, too.
Okay. Okay, so are we good with that, Lennon?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So next we have the permit technician code enforcement function staff line. Town Manager Dury.
Yeah, members of council, this is the next step in the process to get us into the building permitting and lower level code enforcement function. As the staff report shows, this was discussed earlier with a variety of options. The hybrid options were the ones that mayor and council at the time seemed most interested in. One of the hybrid approaches is to bring in a permit tech position, and this is something we're increasingly seeing in local governments, which is someone who has, as they say, front counter staff obligations, but also is skilled in customer service and understands the at least rudimentary levels of construction and interpreting codes. Permit Tech is a valuable member of the team and would also be the one who does the lower level code enforcement by way of access to the town vehicle, which would not be a take-home vehicle, which would be over here and driven around, I'd like to say at least 6 to 8 hours a week to do the kind of eyes on properties and also maintain the various databases and property files. What I'm proposing is that this is some, and the full job description is attached. What I'm proposing is that this is someone who comes in at the salary range of just under $39,000 to $42,500 with benefits. And also this is someone who is on the track to become International Code Council certified, which is about a $900 process for class and the exam, and that they do that within 2 years of their employment with us. So the expectation is somebody who grows in their understanding of the job and their obligations. So that's what I've got as far as the in-house service. And again, the heavy-duty plan review, the inspections, the follow-up on things like stop work orders, all that would be to an outsourced firm, which is the next item on the agenda. So this is the hybrid approach of some skills in-house and some skills outsourced.
Have you looked on Indeed?
this is a time thing, so we actually haven't been able to get into it yet, but Caroline County hired a advertised for a permit tech about 5-6 weeks ago, and as soon as they bring somebody on board, I was they were going to let me look through their applications. My expectation is you'll get somebody who can do this, and that is a matter of developing them to make sure that that person wants to stick around for a while. Again, this isn't, I mean, it's, for us, it's a growth position, but there isn't a whole lot of up unless they get so certified that the town wants to get back into full-time in that position again. And who's to say that somebody in 3-4 years doesn't grow into that? But right now, that's not a question. Financially speaking, that's not a good choice for us. When we can outsource it and have access to a firm with a dozen inspectors compared to us trying to find one person to wear one of those hats. So it's a little bit more than stopgap because there's some growth that can go along with the individual can grow a little bit, but 7-8 years down the road, this position may, this whole situation may look, you know, very different as far as inspections and permitting is concerned. Frankly, all of it can be outsourced, but I don't think we're ready to do that either. So it's the first step.
Does anybody have any questions?
No, it looks good to me.
Sounds like a plan.
Vision and hearing to make sure that we were legally fine with what you
said. Well, the town does not discriminate on the basis of handicap.
It is an essential function of that job.
Right.
Yeah, sight. I'd say that sight is. and hearing.
What?
So mathematical skills, again, you can. We got calculators. So kids can also move along on some of that. They'll get an opportunity to grow if it's the right person who comes on the committee.
Okay, so are you looking for a motion to go ahead and advertise for this position?
I am.
Move to accept the job description and advertise for the position.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Okay, Larry, motion passes. Next, we have the request for qualifications for professional planning, building, and inspection services.
Yes, ma'am. Part two of what we just finished, this is the outsourcing portion, currently being done by an outsourced firm anyway for most of the services. Plan review is, you know, runs everything from, you know, a 200 square foot shed to 30-acre fish farm. So that's something that is probably best left to an outsourced firm anyway. Building permitting by way of their reviews, frequently for instance inspections when we had our own in-house inspector, he also wrote permits. So he had access to the permits that he wrote based on plan review to go out and do the inspection. The outside firm, as it's currently going on, there were a couple of projects before they want to finalize the inspection, they also want to see the permit. So we scan it all over here and just email it over to them. My expectation is that that system would continue. We scan all the permit stuff and send it over to them, this way they see the whole packet, but they're not doing all of it, they're just reviewing it. And then, of course, they would provide the inspection services as well as the stop work stuff on call. One of the provisions I've gotten there in the scope of work is that they do provide support to code enforcement, but code enforcement is not outsourced at this point. Code enforcement remains in-house with the is a 3-year contract with 2 years of additional extension. And again, there's a timetable. If approved tonight, get the hand in the paper, have a closing date of the 20th of January, which is a Thursday, and ideally get somebody on board by, I'll say optimistically, in the March, April, beginning of April. So that's within the time of the 90-day extension for the current contract we have, and would allow mayor and council to review the fee schedule of any firm selected or interviewed, as the case may be, and make the determination that going into the new budget year to adjust the town's fee schedule to reflect the fee schedule of the firm. Because outsourced, the town doesn't need to be making a profit on anything, and at the same time, the town doesn't need to be subsidizing somebody else's process. It's permitting and inspection. It should be on a user pays basis. If you want to do this on your property, this is the cost of doing it on your property. Mm-hmm. It's not a place to make money for the town, and it's also not an opportunity for everybody else to subsidize someone else's garage.
And the inspection also includes rental inspection?
Yes. We would still do the licensing. As long as we're in the licensing business, that's done in this building. But the inspections are done outsourced. And again, if that's the way we've been doing it on a 3-year basis, 200 units a year for approximately 600 rentals, there's an opportunity to look at that as well. I don't know the net benefit of a 2-year inspection compared to a 3-year inspection. The town's done 3-year inspections, a 3-year rotation.
Mm. That seems a little long.
I was
for
thinking
rentals.
The same thing. What did it used to be?
To the best of my knowledge, it's been 3 years.
It's only been 3 years.
I thought that had been changed. I thought it was less than that.
Time. I think they changed it to 2, but I'm not the best of
it. Gotcha. Okay. Well, we might need to revisit that, but does anybody have any questions on the request for qualifications, plan review, building permitting, and inspection services that Larry presented?
No, I'm good with that.
Okay. If there isn't any changes or additions to that, can I get a motion to advertise the request for qualifications for professional planning, building, and inspection services?
I make a motion that we advertise the RFQ for the plan review, building permit, and inspection services.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Okay, motion passes.
All right, Larry.
Okay, next we have mayor and council action items. Councilman Windsor?
Nothing at this time. Oh, no, I take that back. I think you guys did an awesome job with Chambers Park. I was really impressed.
Thank you.
A lot of work went into that.
It was.
Next year I'm hoping for warmer weather. It's been in the 70s until last year.
Of course.
Thank you, Councilman Windsor. Councilman Sewell?
I wanted to acknowledge the efforts of Public Works and the Police Department during our parade. They both did an outstanding job, and it was great to see them all in the streets, and cleanup was swift and well done. And I think a lot of the parade goers appreciated the extra safety measures that were taken as well. So kudos to them. I also, even though I am a Lions Club member, I wanted to acknowledge the Lions Club for all of their effort over the holiday season and the different Christmas activities that they've put on for our residents. And I think they were all well attended, especially the Christmas parade. And I think the town really had a good time and really appreciated all the work. And lastly, I wanted to congratulate Dr. Willoughby on
now it's on the record.
Yeah. And say well done, and again, congratulations. That's it for me.
Councilman Phillips?
Nothing.
You sure? Councilman Willoughby?
Well, I'll echo Ed's
Christmas, December in Fettlesburg has been great.
Mm-hmm.
And all the departments coming together that night to provide that security was also a great, but there's been just tree lighting and all the events have been wonderful to showcase our town. So that has just been fantastic. I did want to ask a question. Sort of a rhetorical question, but I know that there was something that was said at some point about water and chlorine. And I think there's been a lot of comments out about you wash your hands and it smells like chlorine. And is there, I don't know if there's a way that we could just be, put those notices out when something like that happens. And it's, you know, when you notice those things happening, you know, whether it's a water main break or something like that, that occurred, you know, just being able to say, hey, this is what you may experience, or this is what we are experiencing, or something like that. Because, like I said, when you can smell it, you know, when your house plants die because you're watering them, you're down water, and that's kind of weird. Just throwing it out there. And even if we purge the lines or something, just putting out so people know that, hey, there's something going on and this is what we're doing.
So if there's been a water main break, do they have to put extra chlorine in the lines to make sure that it's safe?
No. What two things happen independently on Liberty Road. Right? Well site number 5, which is on Reliance Road, serves that into town. The Wednesday before Thanksgiving, and Steve and I had to talk about doing anything on Fridays or before 4-day weekends, I knew a chlorine injector pump was put in. And the chlorine injector pump, my understanding, the way Steve explained it, I didn't see it, but it makes sense. The new equipment had a larger injection orifice than the old one did. So it's calibrated the same, but with a bigger hole.
Mm-hmm.
So the chlorine, the way chlorine is measured, it's from, you can't have a zero because chlorine has to be a residual in the water to show that it's been purified.
Right.
So the acceptable range parts per million is more than zero and less than 4. Typically, the town runs 1 fraction above or fraction below. So whether it's 0.85 or 0.17, you really won't know the difference. That injector pump was pumping between 2.5 and 3. So you go from just barely 1 to up to 3, you're going to notice the difference. And that's what all those folks were getting. So we got a bunch of calls on it. After the holiday, it was fixed. But for that long weekend and until it was fixed, which was probably the Wednesday of the next week, the line break, I think, was the Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that helped flush some more stuff out anyway. As soon as the line was fixed, they went back to
normal.
Well, normal with a bigger hole.
Yeah.
Until they got that calibrated, which was a little bit more than that week. So folks went, I mean, the flushing, the de facto flushing of a line break was serendipitous, but, you know, it was about 9 days when the numbers were running, for us, within range, but astronomically high compared to what we're used to. That chlorine residual basically tripled until they got the calibration right. So it was a tougher, you know, you hear things, people's throat were burning and all the rest of this stuff, and it's like, well, I mean, you're not drinking straight up bleach. I mean, it's triple what it was, that's true. But it's still within the acceptable range as far as parts per million are concerned. We're not going to get pinged on it because we didn't exceed 4, but we exceeded what we're used to, and that was a decided change, because it's going to happen here and there. Rarely does it happen up in my end of town. You know, and every time I was talking to somebody, I said, well, do you drink the water? I said, yeah, I drink the water at my end of town, which really, that's not well number 5. So that's how that was. It was a really localized thing for a prolonged period of time at a time when the staff wasn't there to pay attention to it. Because it was done real quick, last out the door before you go to Thanksgiving break. And then because it's like any other repair. By the time it had to get done, 4 days off the holiday, 1 day to figure out what the issue was, line break on Tuesday so everybody's pulled off. Then we had about 2 guys working on Wednesday because everybody else had overtime while it was up till 4 in the morning fixing a line break on Lawrence Road, on Liberty Road. And then it didn't really get around to getting fixed until Thursday. So we're talking about, a full 8 days.
And I guess that's my... Everything, I'm not saying anything was done inappropriate, but just water and sewer is always a hot topic. It's always a hot topic in town. So when something happens, if there's a way in the future, even just put out and say, hey, we had this happen, and it's still within our range, but you may notice X, Y, or Z, but it's fixed now. And maybe that would just let people know what's up. And I don't know, on the new website, there's a way to collect email addresses and send stuff like that, like have a mail list or something like that, a blog post or something, but just something simple anyone can do from their house, just to kind of put the information out there. Folks are gonna think what they want to think anyway, but if we can at least put the real information out, it's helpful.
Do we have this is probably a stupid question. Do we have a map of what well houses feed what roads?
He does, no doubt.
Okay. I mean, maybe that might be something that we put on, like, your information, like, my neighborhood, maybe, like, on our website, there's a my neighborhood link, and you come from here. If there's a water main break here, you would be affected. So when we post those kinds of things, people can look at the map and say, oh, well, that would be me, or, right? So they don't have, then they don't call and say, well, what well am I on, right? Because, if you post there was an issue, we replaced the chlorine injector on well number 5, somebody's going to call and say, well, was that mine? Where am I? Does that feed me? Right. So maybe if there's a way we can kind of...
pump 5 and...
Right.
Or well 5 and they're really on well 1.
Right. Right. Which might lead to some other... Because they're experiencing it, but they come off of a different well run, so...
Right. And then at least when we get the calls or the comments or complaints come in, it goes back to basic stuff. Start mapping this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And this was all, I didn't hear from anybody on Chambers Lane, but one part of Alliance Road, but mostly was the folks on Liberty, and even all the way out of town on Liberty.
So where do folks live up there, don't they, Rob, on Liberty?
My parents were there, my grandfather's there, but I would say there were even a couple of days that the West Central, I washed my hands of that. And so I'm not sure how that happened, but when I can smell it,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, something's up. But we've heard it before too, when lines get purged, just like one other heads up. We're small enough, other people see it in other towns and go, if they do it, why don't we do it? And then they jump to the conclusion that we're not doing it at all. Just being able to push information.
Well, I got a text that the water main was open, or that the one of the hydrants was open. And I was like, maybe they're flushing it, but I texted Larry and Ziva, I'm like, because nobody was standing there,
right?
So he's like, oh, we're flushing out the chlorine. Okay, we'll post something on Facebook, right?
Yeah.
So just a little more preemptive.
But I do think, too, if there is a way on the new website to have a blog feature or something where someone could go, enter their email address, sign up, and then every time we make a post, it automatically gets sent to them, because not everybody has social.
Right, no, I agree, and I think we're missing a lot of people for stuff because of just using Facebook.
Greensboro has that.
Even if you just had a little message, like on the homepage, like a little message box about...
But that still requires them to go.
Well, if they're going to log on to email, they can log on to the town website. But if they know, they can always find it, because I do run into that. I don't have social media. How am I supposed to find out,
Greensboro started, and that may be a contact for you. I can't remember if they started it last year or 2 years ago, but it's a system where residents can sign up, and whenever there's an issue like that, they get a text. Snow, trash is different.
Right. The little...
Technically, would be more efficient than even email. Mainly just looking at my father. He's not, once every 2 weeks he might check an email.
See, my dad's the opposite.
But if the phone if the phone buzzes, he's not texting. He will flip it open and at least see what the text says. So.
With the robocall, we can do all three. Mm-hmm. Text, email, and call.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Thank you. The only thing I have is I would like to echo everybody's sentiments. I appreciate, you know, Public Works and the police department. They did a fantastic job with the parade. I think it was a great parade. I've never seen so many people on Main Street for the parade. Mm-hmm. They were stacked deep on the sidewalk. And I'd like to thank everybody that came through Chambers Park. We probably had about 120 or more cars that came through that were full of people and kids. Right. So it was great, very well received. We got great feedback. We're looking to do it bigger and better next year. So I think that was great. And wish everybody a Merry Christmas and have a great holiday season. As Rob said, it's been great here in town celebrating, you know, Christmas in town. It's been very festive, and that's thanks to the Lions Club and Public Works and everybody pitching in to help make it look so festive, including residents. So
I do have one quick question. Do we know anything about Steve's test results yet?
January.
Okay. I sort of lost track of where we were in that process. Thanks.
All right. If nobody has anything else, then I would take a motion to adjourn.
I make the motion we adjourn.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes. All righty. Thank you.